President Trump recently signed an executive order to increase the standards for the American-made goods the federal government buys. That's something he and people like U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin have been talking about for a while. Buy American, hire American. Turns out that first part, buying American, can be pretty tricky, with American companies that manufacture their products in other countries and international companies that manufacture here in the U.S. and throw into the mix a lot of products that have sources all over the world. Pietra Rivoli is the Vice Dean and Professor of Georgetown University's McDonough School of Business. She's the author of the book The Travels of a T-Shirt in the Global Economy. An economist examines the markets, power, and politics of world trade. Pietra, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Why is it tough to figure out sometimes what gets to be called made in America?
Well, if you think about even the simplest product, it very rarely comes from a single place. You know, let's think about something like a pair of blue jeans, for example. And you say, well, what does it mean to be made in America? Do you mean where the cotton is grown? Do you mean where the yarn is spun? Do you mean where we sew it together? All of these steps can take place in different countries, so it's very difficult to say in economics terms that, you know, this pair of blue jeans was made anywhere. You know, as a result, the idea of where something is made is actually a bit more of a legal or regulatory question. There are rules in place for when you can and cannot say something was made in a certain country.
Yeah, what is the rule? Because there are a lot of products out there that say made in China, made in the United States, made in Indonesia, whatever. Given that it's more a matter of percentages and degrees, what do I need as a manufacturer to slap that label on?
Well, it depends on what you are manufacturing, and different rules apply to different kinds of goods. So just as an example, continuing with the apparel industry, you know, we could, in most cases, we say that it's made wherever it was sewn together. In the case of electronics, we often say it was made wherever the parts were assembled, no matter where the parts came from. But this is really a very complex area of trade regulation, and it's called the rules of origin. So the question is, you know, what are the rules for how you specify an origin? And those rules are complex.
Are those rules intended for the benefit of a consumer who wants to know where their stuff comes from, or are they more part of, say, international tariff regulations?
Well, I think they're both. They do serve some purpose for allowing consumers to know something about the origins of the products they buy, but it doesn't tell you a lot. You know, it tells you generally just where one step of the process took place. So the most, you know, the reason that we have to have a label that says some country is so that we can apply the right trade agreements or tariffs or what have you.
Does the Made in USA label have an impact on consumers in the United States? Does an American consumer prefer that product that says Made in the USA?
Well, that's a subject of a fair amount of research. You know, we call it the country of origin effect, and we ask that exact question. You know, is there such an effect? Will people pay more or will people pay less? And, you know, in some cases, I think we'd all agree there is a little bit of a value associated with certain things coming from certain places. If you think of, for example, Swiss watches or German beer, there is a quality signal that's inherent in that. And in the case of the U.S., you know, there are some consumers who try to buy American and will pay more. But, you know, I think if we were going to talk about the typical consumer, you know, they're looking for the best product at the best price.
Yeah, I've seen different surveys. Some suggest that, yes, American consumers want to buy stuff made in the USA, but in many cases, no, they wouldn't be willing to pay significantly more for that product. Is that generally
exactly
agreed that that's what consumers think?
Well, you know, we don't want to put consumers into one big bucket.
Sure.
There are various segments, but I think if we were going to talk about the average consumer, we would say they're looking for the best product at the best price.
Talking to Pietra Rivoli, she's with Georgetown University School of Business, looking at American-made products, what it means to be American-made in a world where products might be grown in one country, manufactured in another, assembled in still another. All that said, though, there is concern about a lot of stuff that used to be manufactured or some stage of manufacturing here in the United States now being in China or Vietnam or Mexico or Indonesia. What has driven that over the years?
Well, it depends on what type of good you're talking about. You know, in the case of China, you know, a big driver was the admission in 2001 of China into the World Trade Organization, which essentially allowed China to join the club of trading nations and made it much easier for things to come, you know, things to go back and forth between the U.S. and China. Most of the time, production shifts, you know, are seeking either lower costs or better access to raw materials or, you know, superior logistics. So, you know, in many cases, American companies have said, well, let's go and produce something near our customers. You know, that would be one reason for going to produce in China, because China is a huge consumer market. Another reason to go and produce in China would be because there is some sort of talent or expertise or access to certain kinds of management or labor. A third reason could be because I'm trying to, you know, save money on labor costs. So, you know, we all recognize that companies are profit-seeking, and, you know, they are going to try to make those location decisions in a way that either improves their revenues or reduces their costs.
You wrote a whole book looking at these issues through the lens of not blue jeans, but a T-shirt. If someone were to say, hey, I want to open up a business making American-made T-shirts from start to finish, cotton grown here, cotton processed here, treated, all the steps in the United States, what kind of cost add would that be compared to someone who was having a supply chain around the planet?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and the answer is changing dramatically, kind of as we speak. First of all, there are firms who are making T-shirts that are made in the United States from start to finish. Traditionally, they have been more expensive, probably on the order of 25% to 30% more. But the reason that they've been more expensive is because of the labor costs associated with sewing the pieces of the T-shirt together. Most of the other costs, you know, the cost of the raw cotton or the cost of the yarn or the cost of the electricity, you know, all of those costs are quite similar as you look at the U.S. and China. But there was this big labor cost differential. However, nowadays, technology is advancing very rapidly. We have what are known as SEWBOTS, S-E-W, bots, and these machines are very quickly automating the sewing process. So once you get rid of that labor step in the production of apparel and a machine is doing the sewing rather than the people, you know, I think the U.S. can produce at the same or even better cost.
But if the concern is you've lost that manufacturing job to China, replacing that Chinese laborer with a machine here in the United States isn't necessarily a win if the goal is, I guess, manufacturing job creation.
That is correct. This is not, if the object of the game is to make it in America, it would be a win. If the object of the game is to save a seamstress job, it's not going to work.
Something that is kind of mind-blowing still to me, even though I kind of get why it is, the idea that you can make a product literally on the other side of the planet, ship it all the way over here, and the cost of the shipping still don't make it more expensive than it would have been to make in the United States. What's happened in the world of transportation that makes it so darn cheap to bring stuff wherever you want in the world?
Well, there are two kinds of costs that have fallen dramatically over the past generation. One is communication costs, and the second is transportation costs. You know, we wouldn't have been able to have these far-flung supply chains before we had the internet and before we had email and ways to communicate with our suppliers around the world, right? So the fact that we can do that instantaneously and essentially free is one thing that allows us to, you know, push production far away. But transportation has also been subject to a very rapid technological revolution that has dropped the, you know, per pound weight to ship things dramatically.
As we wrap up, Pietra, we have these efforts at the federal level from President Trump and from some in Congress to have the federal government buy more stuff that's American-made and to increase the standards for what it means to be American-made. Is that something that really is going to make a ripple in the U.S. economy?
Well, you can also, you know, you can always nudge things in one direction or another with policy. And I think, you know, really right now, you know, part of the policy that President Trump is trying to implement is almost to shift these location decisions by increasing the uncertainty in the policy environment. So if you just don't know what's going to happen with the trade war or with, you know, our new trade agreement with Mexico, then, you know, companies will say, okay, I'm going to try to play it safe and bring things closer to home. So, you know, I think that's a rational response by companies, but it's not going to change the, you know, the underlying economic logic for why in the long run certain kinds of, you know, economic activities are located in certain parts of the world.
Pietra, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That was Pietra Rivoli, Vice Dean and Professor of Georgetown University's School of Business. She was with us today to talk about what it takes to be considered made in America and whether that affects what we buy.